This sermon was originally going to cover all of John chapter 9, all 41 verses. But the more I worked on it, the more I saw I have to do this in two sermons. So I told some people this week that I would be doing John 10 tonight and deal with certain things. Well, Lord willing, I'll do that next week. But there's also a reason why this sermon became longer. For the past several Wednesdays, I had taught a class called Just Getting Into the Word. I was trying to show how you can make Bible study easier. And I covered 8 different points. And then I thought, well, the best thing to do would be to take my class through a passage of Scripture and show them how it works. And the passage I chose was John chapter 9. And I told my class that Wednesday night, you're going to help me prepare my sermon for this Sunday. And we had fun. I thought it was great doing it. But, you know, sometimes people say preachers can be wordy and long-winded. Well, my class was, well, they said a lot. And I thought, man, I've got a lot of material here. They're bringing up a lot of good questions and a lot of good comments. It's going to take up quite a bit of my sermon. So most of my comments on just the first 7 verses are coming from that class, which would include thoughts that I was giving at the same time as well. And today we're only going to go to verse 12. Now, before we get into chapter 9 of John, we need to take a look at the end of chapter 8. Jesus had declared to the Jews in verse 58, "Most assuredly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." When they heard Jesus make that declaration, that self-confession, they understood him as saying that he was the one who appeared to Moses in that burning bush. They understood him as saying he was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And they were not happy with what they heard. So look at verse 59 says, "Then they took up stones to throw at him." And I don't mean just like they would do out of the schoolyard, you know, maybe some kids get mad at some others and they throw some rocks at them. No, they wanted to kill him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. Now here is something you cannot miss. They wanted to kill him. But instead of getting out of Jerusalem entirely, knowing that they could find him again, and rather than just finding a safe place, here he is still at the temple. And walking out of the temple, he noticed a man begging. Well, I mean, if you and I had been there, would we not be fearing for our lives? Would that not be our primary thoughts? A group of people are trying to kill me. I got to get out of here. And so you run. Jesus had his own problems. But he saw a man and did not ignore him, but showed the man compassion. This is where we begin chapter 9. Now, as Jesus passed by, remember the last few words of verse 59, they said Jesus passed by. Now, as he passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. He took the time to look outside of himself and notice a man begging. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Well, obviously, the disciples also noticed the man, although their friend is about to be killed. And they see this man and they ask a question. They want to know, who sinned, Jesus? This man or his parents that caused his blindness? And really, the disciples here were like all people, believing that one's suffering is rooted in a sin you've committed. Or maybe that someone else has committed. Sometimes we just want to find someone or something to blame or someone to pay for it. But, you know, sometimes things happen just because they happen. And maybe there's no explanation. And I also wondered, and my class wondered, did the apostles assume something? They assumed that sin caused the man's blindness. Now, if he had been a young boy and something got thrown into his eyes, you could see the reason for it there, but here comes this man into the world, excuse me, never having seen. And it has to be sin. It has to be either he sinned or his parents sinned. And that's why he's blind. Well, we do know that all suffering is in this world because of Adam's sin. Not as a form of punishment, but when Adam sinned, sin came into the world, death came right along with it, and all its cousins. Suffering in the body. So, you know, he's just suffering because he's living in a world that has been baptized in sin and death. Sin and suffering as well. But so it's not his personal sin or his parents' sin. Now, if the man had sinned, now think about this. He would have had to have sinned before his birth. What are the apostles thinking here? Did they believe in reincarnation? You know, I thought to myself, okay, reincarnation is the teaching of Hinduism. Has Hinduism been around that long? Yes. It was around 3 or 4 centuries before Christ. So did the Hindu teaching of karma enter into Palestine? It's certainly possible. Did they believe some of it, or did they just wonder about it? Maybe they didn't believe it, but they thought, hey, we've heard the arguments. How do you explain this man here? Maybe he did something in a past life, and now he's paying for it. Now, sometimes, but not in this case, children do suffer for their parents' sin. I mean, if the parent is driving drunk and he has his child in the car and the parent crashes and it hurts the child, well, obviously the child's suffering for something the parent did wrong. But in Ezekiel chapter 18, the Bible shows that the Jews of Ezekiel's time believed that the children suffered in a general way for the sins of the parents. And God even asked them through the prophet, why do you think that way? Listen to verse 2, Ezekiel 18. What do you mean when you use this proverb concerning the land of Israel, saying, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge? In other words, the Jews were saying, the parents sin, and the children are punished for it. They're the ones who feel the effects of it. But God refuted that thinking. Look at verses 3 and 4. As I live, says the Lord God, you shall no longer use this proverb in Israel. Why? Verse 4. Behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the Father as well as the soul of the Son is mine. The soul who sins shall die. In other words, I'm not going to take the life of the child for the sin of the father. It doesn't work that way. And of course, the disciples should have known that text. But maybe they're just thinking there's got to be an explanation as to why this guy was born blind. And they didn't know what else to think. How did Jesus answer their question? Well, notice these four things. Number one, he said, neither the man nor his parents sinned. No one's sin caused this man to be born blind. Number two, this man was born blind to reveal God's works. So there's a purpose here. Number three, Jesus said, Jesus came to reveal God's works. So let's think about that for a moment. The man and his parents did not sin, but this man was born blind to reveal God's works. Jesus came to reveal God's works. Therefore, Jesus, that's number four, is the light of the world. He came as a light to show something, to reveal something. Now consider the answer of Jesus carefully. This man's blindness had a cause, which was to provide an opportunity to reveal the works of God. Is there a reason for suffering? Yes, there can be. It's not necessarily something negative. See, we want to be well and never suffer. We do everything we can to keep from suffering. But Jesus taught that suffering can have a purpose. The purpose here was to reveal something not about the man, but about God. Can you reveal something about God in your suffering? Whatever it is you're going through in life, think about that. Force yourself to think about God. And see then if somehow your suffering can reveal something about God. Perhaps we cannot always know why things are so, but rather than finding someone to blame, and rather than being frustrated by it, we can do as Jesus did and do something about it. Interestingly, part of the answer of Jesus was that he was the light of the world. What is light for? We use light to see. That's why we have lights on in the auditorium right now. And Jesus came into the world as a light to show something. Something that was hidden otherwise. And he wanted to show the world the works of God in this blind man. Likewise, Jesus told us in the Sermon on the Mount that we are the light of the world. God put us here. If you are a disciple of Christ, God put you here for a purpose, to show His works. And one way we can show His works is through our suffering or through the suffering of another person in what we do towards that person. Now in verses 3 through 7, Jesus said this. And actually, I didn't even read verses 3 through 5 earlier. Sorry about that. But here it says, Jesus answered, neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with his saliva. And he anointed, interesting use of word there, of words. He anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, go, wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Now, what did Jesus say he was going to do in verses 3 through 5. He said he was going to reveal the works of God. Did he do as he promised? Yes. And he did not do it through a medical procedure. But he who made man, giving him sight all from the dust of the earth, in the very beginning, used the dust again to give sight. What Jesus did, no one can do. Now, we are learning how, recently, how to give some people sight. But we do it through medical procedures. We don't do it by spitting on the ground and mixing it with dirt and rubbing it all over someone's eyes. Now, one of the people in my class asked, why did Jesus not speak the miracle as he did at other times? And you know, that's right. Other times he would just speak a word, or other times he would just touch someone. Why didn't he do that in this case? Why did he have to use his own spit and the dirt and put them on someone's eyes? Well, in this case, the blind man had a part to play. Something that he could do. Sometimes a person could do nothing, and so Jesus required nothing of that person. But if a person could do something, Jesus had them do it. God, from what I can see, does not do for us what we can do for ourselves. He only does what we can't do for ourselves. And even then, if we don't do the part that we can do, He won't do the part that only He can do. Now, why did Jesus heal the man with spit and dirt? Can you imagine what that must have looked like? I mean, you know who He is. He's the Son of God. He's the Lord of heaven and earth. And I don't know if he was standing when he spit, but at some point he had to get down on the ground and mix it in the dirt and pick it up and go over to the man and rub it in his eyes. And of course, he didn't see it coming. What was his response when that happened? And he may not have heard Jesus spit either. In fact, later in the text, when he tells others how he was healed, he says nothing about the saliva, but he just talks about the clay. So he may not even known what the moisture or liquid was that was made used to make the clay. So why did Jesus heal the man with spit and dirt? Can God be arbitrary? Yes. Does he always have to have a reason for what he does? Well, no, I don't think so. Now, maybe he does, but can he be arbitrary? Why are you wearing the clothes that you're wearing today? Because my wife picked them out for me, or my mother did. It all goes back to her, doesn't it? Okay, let's pick on her. Lady, woman, why are you wearing the clothes you're wearing today? Well, because it's spring, and I wanted to wear something that looks like spring or something. I don't know. You did it because you wanted to. You have something else in that closet that has a spring theme. Why didn't you wear that? Because this is what I wanted to wear today, Don. Okay? All right. We won't argue. Can God do that? Can God say, you know, this time I'm going to touch you. This time I'm just going to say something to you. This time I'm just going to send you away and the miracle will happen as you're walking away. This time I'm going to spit on the ground, on the filthy dirt. That's kind of redundant, isn't it? Filthy dirt. You know, on something filthy, mix it with my saliva and put it all over your eyes. Also, consider this. What if he used the same formula every time? Every time, same formula, and spoke the same words every time. I think if he did that, people would start to think the power, or they might even think the magic, is in that method. You do the right method, or you say the right words, and a miracle happens. In fact, Acts chapter 19 shows us that there were some men who thought that very thing. The Bible tells us in Acts 19 that God was doing some really unusual miracles. A miracle's unusual in the first place, but Luke says they were unusual miracles. And doing these miracles through Paul, and there were seven sons of one particular man who saw what Paul was doing. And they heard his words, and they thought, oh, we've discovered it. There's a magical formula here. Watch what happens in Acts 19, starting at verse 13. Then some of the itinerant Jewish exorcists took it upon themselves to call the name of the Lord Jesus over those who had evil spirits, saying, we exorcise you by the Jesus whom Paul preaches. Also, there were seven sons of Sceva, a Jewish chief priest, who did so. And the evil spirit answered, Jesus I know, and Paul I know, but who are you? Who are you guys? Who do you think you're fooling around with? Then the man in whom the evil spirit was leaped on them, overpowered them, and prevailed against them, so that they fled out of that house naked and wounded. I mean, they said the right words. They spoke the truth. Paul was preaching Jesus. But it didn't work. And that's because the power was not in the formula. It's not an open sesame sort of thing. It's not a secret code. The power was in Jesus Christ, and in whom he gave that power. In this case, Paul. So varying the method demonstrated that the formula was not the power. The power was God. Consider this also. Whom has John shown us Jesus is in the gospel according to John? He's been showing us that Jesus is the Son of God. That he's even God himself. And he began his gospel account, chapter 1, by speaking of Jesus in that way and showing that he's the creator. And God made man of the dust of the earth. Genesis chapter 3. And here, Jesus healed a man with the dust of the earth, showing that he is the creator and he still controls the creation. Again, while Jesus did heal the man, Jesus required the man to do something. But what if the blind man had said, you know something, why do I have to go all the way over there to the Pool of Siloam? My home is just a block away, and I know the water is pure there. I think I'll go there and wash my eyes. Or what if he had said, hey, look, you're the one who put the dirt in my eyes. You clean it off. I'm not going to do it. Would he have been healed? I don't think he would have in either case. Just like with Elisha and Naaman. Naaman comes to the home of Elisha. Elisha sends a messenger out. The messenger says, go wash seven times in Jordan River and you'll be cleansed from your leprosy. Well, I'll tell you what, that really upset that Syrian general or captain. And he went away in a rage, the Bible says. You know, why can't I wash in the rivers back home? You know, they're better than this muddy Jordan River. And he went away, still with his leprosy. Not until he went back and did, as the prophet said, did he receive his cleansing. So in other words, Elisha meant what he said and said what he meant. Jesus likewise meant what he said and said what he meant. Go wash in the Pool of Siloam. That's your part. I've done my part. Why is it that we want to argue with the Lord? Do you know how much of the ministry of elders and preachers is trying to deal with people who say, I don't want to do it that way? And we have to say, oh, but you do need to do it this way. This is the way the Lord wants us to do things. But, you know, I mean, I get that way sometimes. Why? I don't understand why I have to do it that way. My way looks better. So here I am, this little pipsqueak who's been around only for a few decades. And God's been around for what? Ever? And he created all things? and I think I know better than he does? Look, he says to love your enemy, so love him. He says to forgive your brother when he sins against you and repents, so do it. On and on you can go with the whole list. Simplify life by doing what the Lord says to do in the way he says to do it. That really will simplify life. So again, before Jesus gave the man his sight, he first put a saliva and dust mixture on the man's eyes. What does it feel like to have a speck of dust in your eye? I mean, you've had that before. Just one little speck. Man, it's irritating, is it not? And sometimes the Lord does unusual and irritating things to us before he blesses us, as this man found out. The question is, can you handle that? Can I handle that? Can I handle him doing something unusual? Can I handle him irritating me before he blesses me? Or do I insist that everything is always pleasant? Can he use the common things of this world to bless me? Well, you know what? We're all blessed with dirt every day. Are we not? Did you eat today? Well, some people don't eat breakfast. Did you eat yesterday? Well, okay, you might be fasting. Did you eat last week? Well, where did that food come from? I ate a cow. All right, where did the cow come from? Well, he had to eat a plant. Where does a plant get all its stuff? Well, it gets it from the dirt. So we all eat dirt all the time anyways. And the stuff that comes out the back end of the cow sometimes goes into the dirt, and then we eat all that. You know, so saliva and mixture and dust is not necessarily all that unusual. Look what we do all the time. Now look at the last sentence of verse 7. It is so simple, and yet it's powerful. The man went and did as Jesus said. Could we say that the man blindly followed the Lord? The man did not argue or question the Lord's method, but just did what the Lord said to do. Now, did it seem like it would work? If I had been there that day and had never seen a miracle of Jesus, I would have said, wow, this is pretty kooky here to me. But the man, whether he thought it was going to work or not, he did it anyway. And if we believe that Jesus is Lord, should we not also blindly follow him? I don't mean ignorantly. And I'm talking about those of us who are Christians already. I mean, why are you a Christian? Because you made the confession, I believe Jesus is Lord. Okay, you do? Then unhesitatingly obey him. Now, what happened when he obeyed Jesus? For the first time in his life, he could see. He saw his parents for the first time. He saw the temple that others had tried to describe as grandeur to him. He saw it for the first time. He could watch a leaf fall from a tree. He could watch the clouds dance up there in the skies and form and go away. You know, just this past week, I was in a parking lot of a store and I looked over here towards Mount Baldy. And right about halfway up the mountain, and I know where the Rogue River is going right there, there's some weird stuff goes on over there up in the air. I don't know what it is. I'm going to find out one of these days. But all the other clouds that were hanging around, fog-like conditions, were just hanging around. Except for in this one spot. They were just spinning around and they disappeared and it'd form again and disappear. I've seen in that same spot before where the fog, I can't remember, it's probably coming from this direction, just hits something there in the air and just goes up and keeps going around like this. What? How fascinating. Have we forgotten to look at all the wonders God's given to us? Just be amazed by everything that's around you. Try that today. Look at a leaf and say, what if I have never seen that before? Look at a cloud today and say, what if I'd never seen that before? That's what this man was experiencing. Now, let's look at the last several verses for today, 8 through 12. Therefore, the neighbors and those who had previously seen that he was blind said, "Is not this he who sat and begged?" Some said, "This is he." Others said, "He is like him." He said, "I am he. I'm the guy." Therefore, they said to him, "How were your eyes opened?" He answered and said, "A man called Jesus made clay." Notice he doesn't mention any saliva in it. He doesn't know where the water came from. "And anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash.' So I washed. So I went and washed and received my sight." Then they said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I do not know." Well, his friends wondered, you know, what had happened to him. Seeing him, looked him in the eye like they had never seen him do before, they wanted to know what had happened. And they may have heard Jesus doing this to other people, because Jesus at this point had performed many miracles already. But still, their excitement for him just led them to want to know what happened here. Now, verse 11 begins to show the brilliance of this man. His eyes had been dull, but his mind was sharp. Never make the mistake of believing someone's impaired physical condition impairs his mental, emotional, and spiritual conditions. Now see how he answered the question of his friends. He just said in brief, Jesus did this, then he said this, I did what he said to do. I've got my sight. It was just that simple. Nothing complicated or complex. He didn't have to spend a long time in training courses to learn how to tell people how this happened. No one had to prod him into doing it, make him feel guilty all the time to do it. You know, what he did is just what any of us can do. And having heard the simple explanation from their formerly blind friend, they wanted to know where Jesus was. And again, the man was simple and told the truth about Jesus. He didn't know. And if you don't know something about Jesus or the Bible, just tell someone, "I do not know. I just don't know, but I'll find out for you." And people will appreciate you for it. The disciples, when they saw this man, they saw suffering as a reason to be sad and to debate. Just like the friends of Job in the book of Job. Whereas Jesus saw misery as a reason to minister. You know, we can argue all day as to why something is the way that it's done, but at the end of the day, what have we accomplished? Just like the friends of Job, all three of them, they argued with him all day long about why he was suffering, but at the end of the day, the guy was still suffering. None of them said, "Job, those boils are horrible on your body. Let me take care of them for you." And he was filthy, dirty because of all the fluid from the boils that he was scraping open, and he's sitting on the ground, and he had covered himself in dirt, thrown it up in the air. None of them said, "You know, I don't know why you're suffering, but can I bathe you?" None of them offered to help the man, their friend. One preacher said, the disciples asked why the man was blind. His neighbors asked how his eyes were opened, but both groups missed the most important question, which was, who performed the miracle? So are you asking, why is my life the way it is and how can it be fixed? And those are good questions. There's nothing wrong with them. They need to be asked. However, the answers will not come until we ask, who can help us? And unfortunately, the answer that many people want is the government. The government is the one who's going to help me. We look at government as God. In fact, we look at our president as God. Have you ever noticed that? And notice that especially in this election year. problems are blamed on presidents that they have no control over, and good things that happen are often credited to them for which they don't have any control. They don't control the weather, but listen to us, we think they do. And I could list a whole lot of other things. The government's not God, Jesus is. I'll tell you what, if I'm the one who baptizes you, I don't say, well, do you now believe that the United States government is Lord? I don't ask you that. And I'm not going to. I ask you, do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? And you say, yes, I do. You need and want God to help you. And God helps through Christ. That means for God to make sense of your life, you must become a disciple of Jesus Christ. Are you ready to do that? If so, come forward right now as we stand and sing.